you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
So, no further ado, I want to go ahead and like pass the baton to the woman you do want to hear from. So, Tamara, do you want to go ahead and kind of give us the high-level lay of the land of what we're going to be talking about today?
Yeah, so the topic I want to dig into, because I get asked this a lot, or actually I should say it differently, people tell me this is a big aha for them. In fact, it just happened to me this morning at 8 o'clock. I was leading an innovation jam session for the members on the Everyday Innovators Tribe, our membership platform. And in the beginning, I was kind of going through the ground rules, like be engaged, stay present, be open-minded. And then I started talking about how you can't innovate and analyze at the same time. So for the next 60 minutes, we're going to innovate. And then for 30, we can worry about analysis. But for now, be open-minded. And what was interesting to me was people were really surprised and got a lot of value out of just understanding that you can't innovate and analyze at the same time. And I think the reason that we need to have this conversation is that we do this all the time. We actually try to do both at the same time. And it shows up a little bit like this, Chris. And I know you've seen it for me because we've been in masterminds together for years. So I'm sure you've seen me do this where I'll be like, hey, what about this idea? Oh, never mind. Like I shut it down before I even get it out there. Or it'll happen in my head where my brain, my little lizard brain's like, no, Tamara, don't come up with that idea. That's stupid, right? Judging it before I even say it. So the challenge is our brain cannot innovate and analyze at the same time. So we think we're innovating and just kind of judging, but we're actually shutting down all of innovation.
Oh, wow. I never really thought about that way. I've done the exact same thing. We've all done that, right? We're like, oh, no, I don't think that's...
Oh, never mind.
That's not what we were talking about or whatever.
It's not relevant.
So is that like, so I'm curious, like as a pitfall, right, around our ability to innovate, right? I really hear, right, there's this tension, right, between innovation and analysis. So will you talk a little bit more about why this is so difficult and just how this shuts down innovation?
Yeah. So I'm going to get a little geeky for a second and talk a little bit about the neuroscience behind it. So, and then let's talk about some, I'd say, environmental factors as well. Mm-hmm. So we've got this thing called the lizard brain. It's part of our primal brain system, and it is there to keep us safe and comfortable and warm and like not take risks. And in the old days when we had, you know, lived as cavemen roaming the land and there was a rustle in the bushes, it mattered because it told us there's a saber-toothed tiger about to eat us. But today in the, I was about to say boardroom life that we live in, but now I should be like the virtual world that we all live in. All right, here we are. It actually plays tricks on us. So it is that little voice that tries to analyze as you're trying to innovate. So innovation is this structure in our brains that we all have, right? It's like a loose connections of side roads all across your brain. Then you've got this primal brain that's over there like, no, shut it down. So it doesn't even let you to get those innovation engines going. So when you're over there judging your own ideas, when you're over there letting the analysis kick in, you're actually shutting down that structure in your brain that allows you to innovate. So it's not even a matter of you don't say the wild idea because you're afraid someone will judge you. It's that you're not even getting to the wild idea because you're actually shutting down yourself. We do it to ourselves, and as leaders, we accidentally do it to other people.
So Tamara, like, how do we disrupt that? Right? Like, how do we, because I can just see myself, like, I'm hearing this, which is brilliant. And I'm just thinking about like, okay, so next time I am brainstorming or I am thinking of something and I go, oh, you know, and I shut it down. Like, can we actually disrupt that for ourselves?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because that's the point of all of it, right? Is how do we get over it? So obviously recognition is number one, but I actually have a little bit of a trick that is so simple. You'll be like, duh, tomorrow, why don't I just do that all the time? So here's what I like to do. I like to think of it in steps, right? Step one is I innovate, and step two is I analyze. And here's why this works. when your lizard, when your primal brain knows that analysis is coming, it'll shut up. Because it's like, oh, I get to do my thing later. That's fine. Okay, you can innovate and be crazy all you want. I'll get to the analysis part, right? But the other thing, right? I'm on to you. But the other thing about it is it gives your brain the space and the opportunity to innovate. So here's basically how it works. This is so simple. And in fact, let me just say, I go deeper into this in my book, but I actually learned this from a colleague of mine. And here's the short of what happened, because it'll share in this story is the how-to. So I was leading a brainstorm session. We were getting nowhere. It was the typical, that won't work. Yes, but not sure about this, right? The analysis, we really weren't innovating. We were just analyzing every thought we had. And I was super frustrated. So I asked my colleague Cliff to run the next one because I thought maybe we just need a change of pace, right? Like we just need a different facilitator. But he did something brilliant. He got up there and in the very first, it was an hour meeting, I think. And he said, here's the deal, team. For the first 45 minutes, we're going to innovate. We're going to go far and wide. And then we're going to spend 15 minutes analyzing. And just knowing that there was space for both made both possible. So the team went, they had the most innovative breakthrough ideas. And then we got to analyze, right? Because we had quantity to come from. So when I'm innovating or when I'm working, and anytime I'm like trying to work through a challenge, I'm trying to brainstorm something, whatever it is, I'll even tell myself, all right, Tamara, I'm going to give you 15 minutes to innovate and 5 minutes to analyze. I'm going to give you 30 minutes to innovate, 20 minutes. The time doesn't really matter. What matters is you got to tell your brain, yourself, and the people around you that you're chunking it out. It is truly, truly that simple. For anyone watching and then listening, just do it. You will be amazed at when you just say, all right, I'm going to give you 15 minutes and then 10 minutes to analyze. Your brain's like, okay, we got this.
I can see that. Like, I can totally see that where like, it's like, and again, because I just hear like in what you're sharing, because in the world of innovation, right, there's this like, anything's possible.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is like, we got to have focus. We got to have clarity. We got to know what the next steps are. We got to know what the action steps are. And that's that analysis. And they just can't, I can really see how like those just can't coexist. So if you chunk it out, I love that. That's brilliant. And I'm curious, like when you are innovating, like, is it one of those, like every idea is a good idea or like, do we be like, okay, that's ridiculous. Like, no, I'm not going to include that. Like, that's so, right? So that we don't go down a rabbit hole that's not going to serve us. Like, what do you recommend around that?
So here's the thin ice on that one. That's the reality. The reality is, while I don't necessarily think an idea is bad, that doesn't mean it's right. It could absolutely be the wrong idea. And that's why analysis is so important. So I think oftentimes in innovation, the mistake we make as the people leading the sessions, the workshops, being the thought leaders out there, whatever, is we go, no idea is a bad idea. Anything's possible. You just have to dream, right? Right? I mean, it's kind of ridiculous.
Like, no, we can't do that. We know we can't do that.
We have realities. But, right. But here's how I look at it. If I can go for quantity and everything's possible first, mm-hmm. in the kind of figuring out the criteria and the analysis, right? When I start to vote and judge and decide which ideas move forward, the ones that aren't right don't. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I was in a session once and someone said something that was so insanely wild and impossible, right? There was just, it was not possible, but there was room for her to get that up on the board. And then because she got that up on the board, it led to pushing the idea we did go forward with a little bit further because we had this other space that we had thought about. Mm-hmm. So I don't think every idea is the right idea. I think we're doing a huge disservice by saying anything's possible and we're going to do everything and everything is a yes. That's actually not the reality we live in. We got to focus, right? So, but I do believe in the innovation stage when you're just thinking that you can go far and wide. I want to share a quick study with you that I recently read in, I think it was Atomic Habits, but I could be wrong about the book, so bear with me. But here's the deal. There was a photography professor, and he broke up the class into two groups. Group, have you heard this one? It's like my favorite.
I haven't, no.
So group one was going to be graded on the quality of their photos. They needed to have the perfect photo. Group two was going to be graded on sheer quantity. Here was an interesting thing the professor found. The pictures that came out of group two, the quantity, were far superior to the ones in group one.
Wow.
So why, right? So it's a little bit obvious. I mean, you're nodding your head already, like you get it. Group one was so worried about perfection and the right solution, like the right picture out of the gate, which for us, like the right solution, the right idea, right? That they weren't trying and experimenting, exploring, where this group over here, they tried, they experimented. They were out there taking a ton of photos, and then they got to figure out which ones were the quality ones. That to me is like the most beautiful example of innovation and then analysis, because you are allowed to experiment and play and go far and wide. And then in all that, you get to pick the one that works for you, right? The idea you should move forward. The challenge over here is when we're like trying to analyze at the same time and go for quality is we get stuck on one solution or maybe two, right? Because we don't have enough. And then it's either, then we're stuck with something that actually kind of sucks, or we've got nothing because what we have isn't good enough. So I love that. I think that's like the most brilliant study ever done.
Yeah, and it's funny because it really resonates, right? Again, in some of our work, we talk about, you know, progress over perfectionism, which is a lot easier said than done for those of us who are perfectionists. I can't imagine who that might be. At the same token, like what I really hear with the experimenting is that iterative piece. Right? Because every time you go and you take a photo, you're like, oh, well, wait, I want this different light. Oh, I'm going to take another, right? Like, but I'm curious, right? Like with our teams, right? I know you work with a lot of different organizations and a lot of different industries. And as a, you know, as a leader with my team, if I'm sitting down with them and like, you know, time is limited and I'm like, okay, we got to, I do want this quantity of thinking, but I probably already bring some of my own thinking that I've already had my analysis. And you'll hear this, teams will get so frustrated. They'll be like, yeah, they ask us what we think, but like the decision's already been made and either we feel like we're being placated or like, right, that our ideas aren't actually being considered. And I'm just curious, like within this, like what do you see that leaders could do to really support that innovation of their teams within some of the thinking?
Yeah, that is a great scenario, because I think it's true for a lot of us, or we've been in that place or we're accidentally doing that. And I want to go back and ask you a question about perfectionism and innovation in a second. So let's hold on to that, because I know you so well. Like the beauty for those of you who don't know us is like, I'm like, oh my God, let's do it. And Chris is like, let's think this through tomorrow. But the balance is beautiful. But I want to ask a question about it from your perspective in a second. Here's the thing about that. I would say, and I would like your perspective on this too, because you help cultures go from toxic to like amazing, right? So, and I've seen it, like I've seen you roll up your sleeves with some really toxic cultures that I thought that's never going to get fixed. You should just call, you know, like throw in the towel, and then you do. So there's a couple things. First of all is don't hold the meeting if you know the direction you're going to go. I would say like, don't waste people's time. Yeah, sorry, but I think that's trying to be a consensus leader, and I don't think that works, because you're not actually going to do it. Consensus never happens. So that would be number one. And here's the second thing I'd say, and I talk about a lot about this in my book and on the membership site too. The part that people miss, I think, as leaders, and I've done this, is we miss the communication back. So you hold this meeting because you're like, I think I know what I want to do, but I need some more input. And maybe you adjust your thinking a little bit, right, because of the input from your team, and that's valuable. And then you head in this direction that maybe is what some people thought, but not what others. We then assume that the people on the other side are going to be okay with our idea or our solution or get why we did it, but they don't, and they don't know. And I think the key in this, it's called an innovation, complete innovation loop, is this fourth part of the loop, which is communicating back. Hey, Chris, I loved what you were saying about blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to include that and we move forward. And here's why, right? Like to me, okay, I feel like I'm getting validated because you said yes, because I'd be like, Chris, tell me what to do. I just think that we miss that. I think people need to be valued and heard, not right. We think people need to be right. That's not been my experience with teams, actually. So I don't know how you feel about that, but like either don't hold a meeting or communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there's two things that you're pointing to that I'm just so aligned with. And like you said, again, if you're going to ask people what they think, right, what they need to know is that they've been heard, their thinking has been considered. And that, like you said, you loop back and you share with them the why, right? And part of it is just sharing that whole journey of your thinking. yeah. and like really acknowledging and appreciating their contribution to that.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll put in, just in alignment with what you shared, Tamara, again, is the pitfall of consensus.
Yeah.
Right. So we talk a little bit about the five different types of decision making, and leaders sometimes get lost in this, and whether they're like just really, really wanting buy-in from their team, or you could have, you know, a leader who's struggling with a desire for validation and
confidence,
wants to be liked. We all like to be liked, you know, but there's this piece when you are looking to make a decision, right? There's authoritative, which is I'm making the decision. And if you're making the decision, then just go make it.
Yes.
Right. But then
want you to be a leader who makes decisions. Like we want right. you to feel valued and heard, but you're a leader for a reason. We want to follow you too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'll just share real briefly, right? Collaborative decision-making is simply, I'm making the decision, but I'm truly considering your input, your feedback, your ideas, your thoughts, right? And that's collaborative. It's still, I'm making the decision. It's not consensus where we all agree. It's not democratic, most votes wins, right? And then when you delegate, you're saying you make the decision, right? But there's just that piece where I think that can be a trap that leaders get lost.
That's well said. And I think to loop it to innovation, I think it really shuts down innovation when you either have meetings that you don't actually give a shit what the people have to say, right? Yeah. I had that leader once, by the way. We would all roll our eyes going into this conference room because we knew he just wanted validation that whatever it is he wanted to do was right. Whether we agreed or not, it didn't matter. And it was so demoralizing. And we just stopped being innovative because what was the point? Mm-hmm. And I wish he just made the decision and then come to us. I actually would have been more aligned with our path had he just done that.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, right, I had a boss who actually he was brilliant. So he would collect feedback on his thinking and then he'd come to each of us and say, hey, here's the direction we're taking and here's why. And even if my input didn't seem to rise to the top for whatever reason, yeah. I kept innovating. I think as leaders, we gotta be very careful that we keep those innovation pathways open by not making those mistakes you were talking about. So here's my question for you as the more on the perfectionist side of things than me. And I wouldn't call you a full perfectionist, but like you definitely, if there's a spectrum.
I'm a recovering perfectionist.
If there's a spectrum, you're more on that side than me. That's so right. here's my question for you as someone, like, because I think that's a lot of us. I'm not like putting the spotlight on you like that, but how does this idea of breaking up innovation and analysis speak to someone like you who wants to do that, like judging and thinking maybe a little early?
Again, I just love how you broke it out, right? Where there's just this freedom of like anything goes. Now, granted, you get to come back to the analysis, but there is no wrong answer. There's not right answers either.
Right.
But is that like, you can't screw up, you can't fail. There's no mistakes. There's nothing wrong. Like you just get to create.
Yeah.
See how things lead and connect. So it actually really provides something tomorrow because I just get like, there's just a freedom there. There's like, then the whole intention, if I'm doing this right, which we perfectionists want to do it right.
Yeah.
Like to do it right would be to be like, let it all hang out, think it all, you know, let anything in. And then knowing that there's that safety net or that thoughtfulness or intentionality around the analysis that'll come afterwards and things. And again, it allows things back to your photography example. It allows all these other potential, pathways that wouldn't have been available had I just been focused on doing it right.
You said something really important. You said it quickly, but you said it's not about right or wrong ideas or good or bad ideas. And that's the key, right? Innovation, the innovation phase is not about finding the right idea or judging something that's wrong. It's really much more it's innovative and objective at the same time, if it can be that, right? It's about getting it all out there and then deciding that later. And whether you're doing that by yourself, I do this with myself all the time. And I have to remind myself of this, right? Because I will catch myself
right
in a moment. I have to be like, no, tomorrow, analyze later. But it allows us that freedom, as you put it. But also, like I said, it's you get so much more quantity. And here's the other thing I've discovered with people when they do this is you actually get more strategic and smarter about your analysis, because you're not stuck with three ideas, one idea, you're not judging too soon. You actually have a chance, once you see all the opportunities, you actually have a chance to really be smarter about your analysis too. So it's not that like innovative thinking doesn't happen in analysis, but half the time we don't even have the room to do analysis right because we're jumping so fast to it.
Well, it's funny, Tamara, I just realized something that also gets created out of this process that you suggested. So one of the challenges, if you are trying to do it right and that you narrow too quickly, is there's this concern that maybe there's something you didn't think of, or maybe like had you done a little bit more research, or if you had included a little bit more people's thinking, or if you had taken more time to like be more wide range with it, that, right? So there can still, even though you're moving forward with a single focus, there can be a wonderment. I wouldn't say like a fear of missing out, but you might be, right? Like, because you haven't allowed the different opportunities to show up. Yeah. And so I just, that's just something that occurs to me too, because I think that happens for those of us who narrow too quickly.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. There is a FOMO that goes along with it. And you're right to have that FOMO because you didn't explore. I'm going to go on a 1 minute tangent for a second that relates to that. I did a burst of innovation, a LinkedIn video about how you can actually foster more innovation on virtual meetings than you can in live meetings. And my one point that I made that relates to your FOMO comment is with virtual meetings, we have more of an opportunity to break up the sessions, right? Here's what happens when we do a day, a weekend, whatever, we're like cramming all the brainstorming or all the ideation, right? All the solutions into that time. With virtual, a couple things happen. First of all, you can invite people you couldn't normally invite because you're not constrained by geography, and that's awesome, right? Because you get more across that intersection of thinking, more innovation. But also, you can break it up. So it's easier to do 3 hours on Monday, 4 hours on Wednesday, whatever, right? However you want to break it up. But the reason I mention that is, to your point about the FOMO, is innovation takes percolation too. And oftentimes, I don't know if this ever happened, this happens to me all the time. When I'm in one of those live, like one-time sessions where I'm trying to like get it all in, 2 days later, I'm like, oh. Why didn't I think of that? Now they've moved on to implementation. Damn it, right? So when we actually break up the innovation phase, we actually get more innovation too, because we're giving people a chance to just percolate. It doesn't even have to be conscious. It's just, right? Because that happened to all of us, where 2 days later, you're like,
What? I call it like composting, depending on what you're working on, or marinating. But I like percolating.
I like compost. It feels very,
especially if you're like dealing with the like.
It feels very like hipster.
The hipsters are gonna be like, we don't do that face. I'm gonna be like, I'm so sorry.
I said to somebody the other day, let me check my Rolodex, and they were like, how old are you?
Speaking of innovation.
Right?
I hate to tell ya.
I know.
Oh, so good. So I guess, Tamara, at this point, I'm just kind of curious, like what is your kind of cherry on top? Because again, this has just been so valuable, and I really appreciate like the actionable clarity and nugget of like, oh, okay, so I set my timer for innovation time.
Yeah.
And then I set aside time after that for analysis. But is there anything else you just want to make sure that your community really hears about, you know, to innovate and then analyze?
Here's my one cherry. I'd say don't make it any more than that. Like, people try to overcomplicate this all the time. Don't. You have 10 minutes. Tell yourself, I have 6 to innovate and 4 to analyze. If you've got 30 minutes, like, it really is. It's so painfully simple, and we as humans want to overcomplicate everything, but it's not that complicated. You tell yourself that and consciously do it, right? Don't just assume it. Consciously do it. You shut down the lizard brain. The perfectionism gets, you know, placated, because it's like, we'll get to that later. You go farther and wider, and that's all great, but that's it. Just innovate and then analyze, but be intentional about it so that you can get to both. And do it in a way that allows the right space for both of them. That's it. Keep it simple.
Beautiful. I love it. Thank you so much, Tamara. Thank you for sharing this with me today and with your community.
Chris, thank you for interviewing me and sharing your brilliance.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.